This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. From cities across the country, a fleet of buses is on the road to Washington, D.C. The Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride is due to arrive next Wednesday, October 1st, to lobby for changes in how the nation treats immigrants, those here legally and those who are not. Immigration reform has been on a back burner since September the 11th, 2001, but it's returned to the agenda, and it's an issue with some interesting bedfellows. Unions, who long feared that immigrants would undercut them, are sponsors of this 21st century freedom ride, and some of the more progressive congressional proposals come from the Republican side of the aisle. Later this hour, we'll remember Edward Said, a passionate supporter of Palestinian rights, a professor of comparative literature, and acclaimed Joseph Conrad scholar, and one of the most public intellectuals of his time. But first, the shifting battleground over immigration law. In state capitals, issues include everything from driver's licenses to in-state college tuition for illegal immigrants. In Congress, lawmakers grapple with how to bring an illegal economy into the light of legislation. At the same time, they try to cope with stubbornly high unemployment. Is it time to revive guest worker programs? Would an amnesty reward violation of the law or recognize reality? What rights do illegal immigrants have, and where do you draw the line? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And we're going to start the show today from the road. With us now is Maria Elena Durazo. She's the national chairperson of the Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride, and she joins us from Las Cruces, New Mexico. And it's nice of you to join us today on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Thank you, Neil, very much.
How far into this ride are you?
Well, we left Los Angeles, so our first stop was Palm Springs, California, Phoenix, Tucson, Arizona, and Nogales, Arizona, right on the border with Mexico, and we stopped overnight in Lordsburg, New Mexico, and now we're in Las Cruces, New Mexico, on our way for a day full of events in the El Paso, Texas area.
So the scenic route, if you will.
The scenic route. Well, some very, very important issues. Actually, they are life and death issues that face immigrant workers who actually lose their lives crossing the border. Their children lose their lives. And there's issues, cross-border issues, like what do maquiladoras really do across the border? And there's a big question mark as to, are they contributing to economic development in Mexico or making life just as full of poverty and misery? But our issues are, you know, immigrants are here in this country. They're here to stay. They work in some of the most important parts of our economy, from healthcare to high-tech industry, farm work, the tourism industry, services, janitorial, you name it, construction. They hold up very essential parts of our economy, and yet they live in the shadows of this economy. That's not right, and the federal government and the White House have got to take responsibility to make sure that they're treated with the recognition that they deserve for what they do in this country.
It's no secret that some of the people coming with you to Washington are undocumented workers, illegal aliens. Anti-immigration groups are calling for INS officials to raid the buses and arrest those people. Is that something you worry about, or is that sort of civil disobedience something that you would welcome?
Well, we certainly don't welcome any kind of confrontation with law enforcement, whether they be local police or Border Patrol or immigration officials. That's not our purpose. Our purpose is to show that there is widespread, deep support across this nation. We hear from a very small minority, a fraction of people who are vocal in being anti-immigrant. What we don't do is we don't hear from the millions of people across this country who do recognize that their neighbors are immigrants who contribute to this economy, that the people that they go to church with are immigrants who contribute to this nation, that the people that they're friends with have children, men and women, sons and daughters dying in Iraq and in other wars. They deserve that recognition. And so we're out to say, let's speak up. let's stand by the side and let's say that we believe that those immigrants deserve recognition. Citizens, African Americans, Anglos, Asians, union members, everywhere, businesses. We have been met with owners of small businesses say we need immigrants. They are important to our local economy. So we're saying those people, that support exists. We're just bringing it out.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with us today, and good luck on the rest of your trip.
Thank you very much.
Maria Elena Durazo is national chairperson of the Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride. She joined us from the road in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Again, those buses are expected to arrive here in Washington next Wednesday. Joining us here in Studio 3A is NPR's own correspondent on immigration issues, Jennifer Ludden. Good to have you back on the program.
Hi there, Neil.
When those buses get here, what kind of reception do you think they're going to get from the White House and from Congress?
Incredibly mixed. It's a real hot-button issue on both sides of the aisle. There are, as you mentioned, a number of Republicans in Congress who have come out in recent weeks proposing wide-scale legalization of immigrants, both those here illegally, and then they want to set up a system for newcomers to come in. And there's also quite an active and growing, since September 11th, 2001, I would add, growing they don't want to be called anti-immigration, but they favor limits on immigration. That caucus in the Congress, the House, is led by Congressman Tom Tancredo of Colorado, and they both sides have been very outspoken about this issue.
And as we're going to be speaking with a couple of the Republican proposers of legislation in just a few minutes, but it doesn't sound as if this issue breaks down on traditional liberal, conservative, or even Democrat-Republican lines.
It's a very interesting issue in that way. You've got conservative libertarians who look at the economy and say we can't do without this. You've got some on the Democratic liberal side who, you know, concerned about security, which has now become the buzzword associated with immigration. It's all about security. But a very interesting development is that in the Democratic presidential campaign, there has been a real sea change. In 2000, immigrant advocates told me that they were afraid to even bring up this issue. I mean, they've been out there lobbying for years. But they didn't even want to pose it to candidate Al Gore because Clinton had said nothing. They were worried Gore would not support a legalization or a guest worker program. Well, then President Bush put it on the agenda very briefly before the 9/11 attacks. And now suddenly you have every single major Democratic presidential candidate on the record supporting some type of legalization program.
Well, in terms of the bills that are actually making their way into Congress or through Congress, what exactly is the spectrum of this legislation? It does go from these guest worker programs all the way to very ambitious ones.
Right. There is there's a small program that was just announced this week. It would affect about 500,000 farm workers only. It's seen as something of a test case and somewhat easier to pass than broader legislation. It would legalize farm workers who are already here and provide a way for them to become permanent residents if they committed to staying in the agriculture industry. This has been a long time in the making. It came together quite quickly in the end, but for years, the growers industry and the agriculture industry and the farm workers unions have been trying to come to some agreement, and it's quite a breakthrough that they have. It's got bipartisan support. They say they're confident they can get through the Senate, but they're not so sure about the House. That's seen as something of a test case for broader reform, which there are a couple of proposals out there, and another one Senator Ted Kennedy's office says they're working on one to be introduced soon that would be very widespread, legalize a lot of the workers who are here now illegally, and also provide a mechanism for new workers who wanted to come in, kind of match up with businesses who say that they couldn't find American workers for these jobs. They could then post something on a website, for example, and some person in El Salvador could log on, say, that's the job for me, go apply for the visa.
All of this also comes in another political context, and that, as we mentioned earlier, is the unemployment figures, which are continuing to stay stubbornly high, despite whatever talk we hear of recovery.
Which makes it remarkable that it's getting so much political support nonetheless. There are a lot of people who just say the economy, despite the current slump, the long-term trend, and there are a lot of figures out there, shows that within, you know, two or three decades, depending on the study, there's going to be a massive shortage of workers in the United States. the people who there, you know, there's competing economists on both sides of the issues, and some of the people who want to limit immigration say, well, we should reform the economy. Why do we have agriculture that's based on hand people picking things by hand? We need to mechanize and so forth. But it is remarkable that there is continuing support for this legislation during a bad economy. Obviously, the bad economy also fuels the opposition.
Now, within the Republican Party, it would seem that there would be some, as you mentioned earlier, some natural splits on this issue. There are people who feel extremely strongly that illegal immigrants are here illegally, they violated the law, and that they should be arrested and deported.
Of course, and again, it's the buzzword of security concern that's, you know, if a Mexican can cross the border, so can someone from the Middle East. And there have been incidents of that. They've been caught in past years. So it's definitely a concern. It's very interesting that basically the only major politician out there who's not talking about this is President Bush, who's the one who first put it on the agenda 2 years ago. He, even before the 9/11 attacks, did come up against some opposition within his Republican Party. And so analysts I've spoken with say that he has more at risk in talking about this issue than the Democratic presidential candidates, who seem to have nothing to lose right now.
He brought it up in the context of his relationship with the then and now president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, who he knew when he was governor of Texas, and yet those relations have soured a little bit on a couple of issues.
And very much so on this immigration reform issue. President Vicente Fox has suffered at home because he told his people he was going to get this deal passed, some kind of a deal, and it has not happened. The Mexican consulates and embassy here are lobbying very hard for this, and they're also pushing other ways. You mentioned, I think, the matricula consular, a Mexican ID card that gives banking services to a lot of illegal immigrants, little ways to ease their lives in different places if they can't get full legal status.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go to Greg, who's with us from San Diego.
Yes. Good morning from San Diego.
Good morning.
My point is that the social and economic life, certainly of California, and I think of the entire country, would suffer greatly if immigration were halted. The reason people are coming is because there is work, and people need cheap labor in the, you know, valleys of California. The farmers are paying, well, to put it another way, if they have to pay the going rate, you know, for people to bend down and do stoop labor, minimum wage, you would be paying, you know, three or four times, you know, for your fresh lettuce on the East Coast. I mean, this is a wealth of cheap labor and people who are not going to fight, you know, for higher wages because they can't. You know, they can't identify themselves to, you know, the DA or to OSHA or Department of Labor. So they're stuck. And they do, at least here in San Diego, provide a wealth in terms of the servile class. You know, your hotel housemaids
and domestics and that sort of thing.
You know,
yeah. Greg,
they provide you know, the undergirding of both agricultural and service work for minimum wages, and that's why they're still coming, because we're open. You know, we want them, and then we say we don't want them.
Greg raises a point that has part of the argument that many make on behalf of illegal workers who are here, yet, of course, they want minimum wage. They want rights. They want to be able to do those things. Right, Jennifer?
And there is some hope with the people presenting these this legislation in Congress that they would provide enough incentive for the illegal workers to come forward. It is all pretty much voluntary, but to come forward and be legalized and therefore get better protections. There are some wage protections in there, and they would have labor rights and so forth. So the human rights of workers is very much a part of the rationale for some of these congressmen pushing these ideas.
Thanks very much. NPR's Jennifer Ludden here with us in Studio 3A. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
When we come back from a break, we'll hear from a couple of Republican legislators about their proposals on immigration. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing immigration and some of the new proposals for how America should deal with undocumented workers. We'd like to hear what you think. Should illegal immigrants have the same rights as people who enter the country legally? You're invited to join the discussion. You can call us, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And one of the latest pieces of immigration reform legislation on Capitol Hill is the Agricultural Job Opportunity Benefit and Security Act of 2003. The bipartisan bill would make it easier for some of the nation's undocumented farm workers to gain legal status in the short term and provide for a long-term overhaul of the guest worker program. Joining us now from Capitol Hill is one of the sponsors of that bill, Senator Larry Craig, Republican of Idaho. And it's nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Neil, thank you.
What would this bill do if it became law?
Well, of course, we've struggled mightily for the last good number of years to try to perfect a way to not only identify, but legalize the process so that we can control the border and, more importantly, or as importantly, provide a stable workforce for American agriculture and give those who work there the same rights and the kind of equity that they deserve to have as workers in this country. So what we do, Neil, is begin a overhaul of what is known as the H-2A program to make it less cumbersome for the agricultural employer to have to identify with. Last year, that program certified between 45 and 50,000 ag workers, and yet there were about 1.6 million ag workers in the United States working.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll give you an idea of how broke this process is.
Well, we can see that there might be a problem in agriculture, but there are problems in other industries, too. Why limit it to agriculture?
Let's take one step at a time, and I think that's what all of us recognize here on the Hill and in Congress. If we can bring together the coalition of forces that streamline this process, identify it, and control this worker flow, so that we accomplish two things, obviously stabilizing the workforce for agriculture and giving reasonable and humane treatment to those who work within agriculture, that's step one. If this model works and works effectively, then all other segments, the service industry and the high-tech industry and others, may well follow suit. It is guesstimated that we've got 6 million-plus illegals in our country. Now, they're not all evil people. The vast majority of them are here. They're hardworking people. They're here to make money, and some of them would like to take it home to where they live. But if you are illegal and you've moved illegally across the border, it's very difficult to go home. It's as difficult to go home as it is to get here. Mm-hmm. You are at risk at all times. So you live in the shadows, and you live in the back alleys, and you live in substandard environments. We hopefully bring those folks forward. There's a way for them to identify, to legalize, to get a green card, and to be able to come and work and go home if they choose, and to continue to work here and to earn their way into the legal status.
As you know, there are critics who argue that this kind of legislation just rewards people who broke the law, as you pointed out, and, of course, not just illegal immigrants, but also the farms and other businesses, the big employers who hire them.
Well, first and foremost, those who hire them, whether they're legal or illegal, are paying top wage in that wage market for them. They're paying minimum wage, some of them $8 to $10 an hour. Some of them are paying piecemeal wage that actually, by contract, produces a good deal more per hour than that. So it is not argued here by anybody who understands the market that agriculture is getting a sweet deal here. The reality is the law is broken. When you have a broken law, yes, they violated the law. I don't dispute that. But when the law is broken, first of all, you're not going to round up 1.6 million individuals and move them across the border. You're going to fix the law. You're going to make it workable. Hopefully, you can then begin to manage the situation by identifying it effectively and controlling your borders. And that's what it's all about. When you don't control your borders and identify the people who flow across them, then the realities of 9/11 starkly are right in front of you. That's a part of what we're trying to do here. Is begin to control process.
Let's get a phone caller in, and Josh joins us on the line from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Josh.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a person who feels for people who want to come here for a better life. These are, as you said before, hardworking, law-abiding citizens. However, you can't ignore that they are law-abiding, and therefore, once they cross the border, they are no longer doing that. There's a reason that this country has, for a very long time, had a limit on the number of people we take in, and we can't take everybody in. And so if we just open the floodgates, then what?
Well, first of all, this isn't opening any floodgate. You have to have been here for a minimum of 12 months, basically, to qualify for this program to get legalized. You've got to show that you have been here, you've been working, and show the receipts of that labor to be able to identify. There is a cutoff date, and that's October 1, 2003. Anybody who tries to sneak under the wire after that is illegal. And they've got to be able to prove that. I don't disagree with you and floodgates, but the floodgates have been wide open for a decade or more. There are 6 to 8 million foreign nationals in this country that are illegal. So something isn't working out there. Let me suggest that we close the floodgates. And ag jobs is a closure process. It's a way of controlling the border and doing it in a legal, organized fashion where you identify and control the flow. What I'm doing and others are doing is trying to step out and solve a very large problem. So to argue that we're opening floodgates and to ignore the 6 million plus illegals that are already in the country really doesn't argue the point, in my opinion, very validly. The gates are open now. We're trying to control them.
Josh, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Senator Craig, we know you're very busy, and we appreciate your time today, as always.
Well, Neil, thank you very much. I'm glad you're taking on this topic. It is an important one for our country. It is an issue that begs for solutions and management. A country that does not control its border and control access to its economies is a country that begins to lose its character. And ours is a diverse character, but it's a controlled one. We know that. We appreciate it. And that's what we're attempting to do here.
Senator Larry Craig, a Republican of Idaho, speaking with us from Capitol Hill. And he's also sits on the subcommittees for Immigration and Homeland Security. And as always, we appreciate his contributions. A broader proposal for immigration liberalization is currently floating in the House of Representatives. The Border Security and Immigration Improvement Act was introduced in late July by Republican co-sponsors, Representatives Jim Colby and Jeff Flake of Arizona. And with us now from his office on Capitol Hill is Representative Jim Colby. And it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Neil. It's good to be with you.
What would your bill do, and how is it different from Senator Craig's bill?
Well, our bill is somewhat different. It's more, I think, I agree with all the arguments that Senator Craig gave. My only problem is that I think that unless you go the next step, you really haven't solved the problem. In other words, if you deal only with the agricultural problem, you still have the problem of illegal immigrants coming across the border. You still have the problem of those who are here illegally in the United States. So our bill attempts to deal, and I know it's a big, it's biting off a lot. And I'm not opposed to what Senator Craig is doing, because maybe that's the first step we take on this road. But what we've attempted to do is address this in a holistic fashion, a comprehensive fashion, by providing a means for those who want to come to this country to get a visa to work here, to take jobs if those jobs are not being taken by American citizens, and only if they're not being taken by American citizens. And the second thing it does is recognize the reality of those who are already in this country and provides a means by which they can legalize their status, but not in an amnesty fashion where they go to the front of the line ahead of everybody else, but rather they go to the back of the line behind others in legalizing their status here in this country. But I think I'm convinced that you have to deal with both parts of this, or else you're right back in the soup where we were before with each amnesty bill or immigration legislation that we've passed. You have to deal with those who are already here, and you have to deal with those who want to come here.
There's another aspect to this, which your bills, Senator Craig's and yours, don't seem to deal with, and that, of course, is the people are coming here to get jobs. They are hired by people. Hiring illegal workers is illegal.
Right.
Why are we focusing so much on the people who are coming across the border and not the employers who benefit from them?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that, and I'm sympathetic here to the employers who say, wait, this person got into the country illegally, but you're going to make me the immigration officer? You're going to make me responsible for determining who is here in this country legally or not? Why isn't that your responsibility to do that at the border and keep these people from coming in? Because we have different laws. We have laws on one hand which say to the employer, if you ask questions of Maria that you don't ask of Mary, you're going to be subject to an anti-discrimination suit. And so the employer is caught between the rock and the hard place. They do put the documentation in their files that are required by law, but the fact is we know that a lot of that is bogus. So our legislation doesn't rely on the employee to tell you that he's here legally. He has a visa in hand when he comes to go to work, and all you have to do is go to the Homeland Security, put that visa number in and the name in, and Homeland Security, the U.S. government, tells you that that person has a legal visa to be here.
Let's get a caller in. Christina joins us on the line from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I'm glad to be on your program.
Glad to have you.
I'm Christina Reeves Healy. I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling because I remember shortly before September 11th, President Fox and President Bush met in cowboy hats and boots, giving each other abrazos and tugging at the hearts of Americans and Mexicans, causing a lot of votes to be put in their favor. And I'm from Mexico City. I work in the United States. I'm also an American citizen. And I feel tricked. And I also know that a lot of people in Mexico also feel tricked. And presently, Mexican nationalism is very awake, and it reflects the nationalism that's anti-American, which also reflects the mood of the United States. Carlos Castañeda, who was the foreign minister of Mexico to the United States, quit, and these policies have been on the table for 30 years.
Congressman, what are you going to do about that?
I think the caller's got a very good point there. I don't think that it's fair to say to the president, though, of the United States or to the president of Mexico, gee, you should have been able to tell us what was going to happen on September 11th, 5 days before that. Nobody could have predicted that. And politically, I think most of us understand that at the moment, that just put everything off the table. And certainly liberalizing immigration at that point, when we just had 3,000 people killed because some people had gotten into this country with visas that shouldn't have had visas. They didn't sneak across the border. I think it's important to understand that, or had overstayed their visas. So we knew we had an immigration problem that was out of hand. To simply say, oh, we should be liberalizing the immigration along the border at that moment wasn't possible. I mean, that's just plain realistic. Mm-hmm. Now, however, we're more than 2 years past that, and it's time for us to go back and revisit this issue. It's time for us to start thinking realistically about how we are going to deal with this problem. So I quite agree with her that people do feel as though they are, I think, very disappointed. There's a great deal of frustration that we didn't deal with this in a timely fashion.
Let's get one more caller in before we have to let you go, Congressman. Now, this is John in Jackson, Wyoming.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure. You're on the air.
We are addressing the problem. It seems like we have Border Patrol agents just pouring into the academy. So this is the answer that we're trying to, this is what we're trying to do to solve this problem. Is this the answer for Border Patrol agents?
Well, law enforcement is clearly part of it. I've always said you have to have a several-pronged part. You do have to have better law enforcement. But as I think we've found with drugs, for example, we can say all we want, but we don't stop drugs from getting into this country. They do get in here. And people are going to come for the same reason, except they're not coming to do harm to people. They're coming, in most cases, they're coming here for economic reasons because they want a better job, better life for themselves and for their families. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is to deal with that realistically. We have had a 400% increase on the number of Border Patrol agents, actually more than that, I guess, in the last 8 years in Arizona, and we're still having the problem. In fact, we're having a worse problem because more and more people are being pushed to the desert, and so we're seeing more and more people come in that way. So it's part of it, but I don't think you're going to stop it entirely. I think it's unrealistic to assume you'll stop that.
And as Congressman Colby knows well, there was just an unfortunate record set in the number of people who died crossing the Arizona desert.
That's correct.
Congressman, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Neil. It's good talking to you.
Jim Colby, whose district lies right along the Mexican border. He's a Republican from Arizona. He joined us from his office on Capitol Hill. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now in Studio 3A is Mark Kerkorian. He's Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, and good of you to be with us here on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
We've been hearing about proposals that would loosen some of the restrictions on illegal immigrants. We want to get your take. Let's start with the idea that undocumented agricultural workers should get some sort of legal status as guest workers.
Well, the whole idea behind these policies, the amnesty guest worker programs, whether it's in agriculture or outside agriculture, is based on three myths. One is that the flow of people into the United States is inevitable. There's nothing we can do about it, so we need to accommodate ourselves to it. The second is that it's economically necessary. One of your callers talked about lettuce being four times the price it is now without illegal immigrants, which is false empirically, but that's one of the myths. The third one is that it's administratively possible, that we can actually manage these kinds of very complicated, huge programs and do it in a secure and efficient fashion. And every one of those is untrue. The flow of people from Mexico or from anywhere is an artifact of government policy. In the case of Mexico, it's Mexican government, the United States government, over many decades have pursued a variety of policies, either proactively or have avoided enforcing the immigration law, that has created the networks, the flows that make immigration possible. For economically, not only is the flow of low-skilled labor not economically necessary, it's actually harmful to the United States, and it's harmful even to the industries where they're concentrated, because even though it helps the bottom line in the next quarter for the employer, it slows the process of technological innovation and productivity increase that's at the heart of any economic progress. And administratively, I have no idea who's going to be carrying out these programs. The immigration authorities can't do the job that they've been given now, let alone heaping upon them millions of extra people whose backgrounds they're supposed to somehow vet and vouch for. It just can't be done. In 1986, Congress passed a big amnesty, and the fraud within that amnesty was stupefying. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people were given green cards who should never have, including two of the people involved in the first World Trade Center attack.
Yet other people say, all right, what are you going to do with 8 million illegal workers in the United States now, illegals in the United States? Rounding them up and deporting them is no easier than any of the other administrative things you were talking about.
It's an appropriate question, but the problem is that it's been presented as a Hobson's choice. Either we amnesty people, however we dress it up or tart it up, it's an amnesty, or we have to round up 9 million people tomorrow and drive them through the desert. The fact is the middle way is the way that works. Attrition, enforcing the law, squeezing the illegal population, and sending the message that the immigration law is back in business, thereby causing people to deport themselves. We've seen that work with regard to Pakistanis, who among the Middle Eastern immigrants that the Homeland Security Department focused on were the country that had the biggest number of illegals. And once it became clear to Pakistani illegals that the immigration law was serious, that was actually being taken seriously, at least with regard to them, half of them are left on their own.
Mark Kerkorian of the Center for Immigration Studies. When we come back from a short break, we're going to continue our conversation and take more of your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. We'll also talk with a colleague of Edward Said's, the writer and scholar, died late last night. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about whether the U.S. should extend more rights to illegal immigrants. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 800-989-8255 or TOTN at NPR.org. With us here in Studio 3A is Mark Kerkorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, an independent research organization here in Washington that advocates a tougher stance on immigration. And let's get right to a caller. And joining us now on the line is Susan, who's in San Diego, California.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I just wanted to comment on the fact that I can't help but feel that we are exploiting farm workers because we need them so much to do the farm work, but yet we're not extending the basic human rights they have. I mean, if we were to pick them all up, so to say, and take them back to the country, who would do this type of work, and how much would they be requesting to be paid? Because we're paying them very low wages, poor housing, and mistreatment, so... I mean, if we pick them all up, who's going to do the work for them, and at what price?
Well, that's a good question. We've actually done a good deal of work on it, and I'll shamelessly plug our website at cis.org that has all of our research. But the short answer is that if the flow of people into any of these industries, whether it's agriculture or construction or landscaping, were reduced, it's not a question of people disappearing overnight, but of a smaller flow over time. Employers do two things. One is they try to attract more people who are already legally here by raising wages, by improving benefits and working conditions and what have you. The other thing they do is try to eliminate some of the jobs that they're having trouble filling through either mechanization, more efficient use of the labor they have, planting different crops, for instance, instead of raisin grapes, which have to be cut by hand, planting almond trees, which are almost entirely mechanized. So there's no reason that the status of the labor market today is somehow has to continue forever. The economy is a dynamic process, and if we change one of the inputs, the labor, then employers will adapt, and in fact will adopt more productive methods of doing their business, and in the long run, that's how we get economic progress and economic development.
Okay.
So, I mean, just a quick comment, and I'll take my reply off the air. So pretty much do you think we'd have to once again ship them all out to achieve human rights for them?
Well, there's two alternatives. One is we legalize them, which is a euphemism for amnesty, and then as citizens, they can do anything they want, form unions, what have you. Or we force them to return home where they work to improve their own countries. What we have now, you're right, is inappropriate. We are permitting large numbers of people to come in, but making sure that they don't get too comfortable when they're here.
Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. We appreciate the call. The issue is likely to be important in the upcoming presidential election, as we heard earlier from Jennifer Ludden. Just about every Democratic presidential hopeful has, I think all of them have, elucidated support for one kind of worker program or another, or immigration reform. Let's listen to this. This was at the Democratic presidential candidates debate in New Mexico earlier this month, and here is Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman.
I have offered the most comprehensive, aggressive immigration reform plan. Yes, earned legalization. Yes, temporary worker visas for workers from other countries. Yes, let's lift the cap on people coming here for family reunification or to seek refuge. And let's put some due process in our immigration laws so the Justice Department under John Ashcroft can't again do what they did after 9/11. Which is to arrest almost 800 undocumented immigrants, put them in jail without charges, without counsel, with notice to their families. That's not America at its best.
And Mark Kerkorian, given the political traction that this issue seems to be gaining, not just in the Democratic Party, do you think that things are going to be changing in the next year or so? And certainly, if there's a Democrat elected to the White House next time.
Well, I challenge the premise that there's any political traction. There's a lot of noise within the echo chamber of the elite. But what we found is that immigration is the issue of where the gap between elite preferences and public preferences is the widest. The Chicago Council on Foreign Relations did a survey of this that we had nothing to do with. We just looked at their numbers. And they found that even issues like support for the UN and support for foreign aid showed smaller gaps between public and elite perceptions than immigration did. Immigration is the issue where there is an enormous gap. And so the fact that political leaders and union leaders and religious leaders and business leaders are all supporting loose immigration enforcement and high levels of immigration doesn't surprise me, because we know that to be the case. We also know that the public overwhelmingly supports tighter immigration enforcement and lower levels of immigration.
Let's go to another caller, and Randy's on the line with us from San Jose, California.
Hi. My comment, I suppose there's a question there somewhere, is the fact that citizenship is, I think, at the heart of all this, what citizenship really means. It is, by its very nature, unfair. It's an accident of birth, and there's an unfairness sort of wired into it. And do we just banish the idea of citizenship, make everyone a citizen, or do we provide levels of citizenship, levels of rights? If we bring everybody in and make them citizens of this country, then, you know, minimum wage laws and things begin to apply, and the whole concept of immigrant workers goes away. I just wanted to make the comment to back it up and talk about what citizenship in this country actually means and is worth, and the fact that it's an inequality to start off with.
So American citizenship should be available to anybody who can step on American soil?
Well, if that's the point we're going to take, I think there's some very major ramifications from that. I mean, it's an unfair situation as it is, because an accident of birth makes you a citizen of this country. So ideas of fairness don't necessarily come into the argument. There's an arbitrariness about citizenship that we have to acknowledge.
I see. I see your argument now, Randy. I misunderstood.
Well, I mean, you know, that's essentially challenging whether the United States has the right to define who belongs to the American people. And it actually gets to a good point, because the point of view the caller is exemplifying really is where most of the supporters of higher levels of immigration and looser controls are heading towards, which is essentially open borders. The Wall Street Journal, for instance, has repeatedly called for a constitutional amendment abolishing the borders of the United States. And that is, I mean, that's the kind of thing that really highlights the enormous gap between elite opinion and public opinion. The American people want to define who gets to belong to us and who doesn't. That's the fundamental attribute of sovereignty. And the proposals to amnesty illegal aliens and essentially to give up on the effort to control immigration really do all move toward the concept of open borders and no distinctions between members of the American people and newcomers. And I would reject that in principle, but even politically speaking, politicians, even if that's what they really think, have to pretend they don't think that.
Well, actually, I would make the opposite point. I'm not actually for open borders. I'm against it. I think that the idea of citizenship is an important one. The fact that it's arbitrary means that that there are going to be people that are disenfranchised just because they weren't born here. And the idea of normal fairness and sort of everybody should be able to do this doesn't apply here. And any arguments that say we can't leave people out are specious in this instance.
Well, Randy, I think you've gotten the last word. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And also our thanks to Mark Kerkorian for being with us here in the studio. He's Executive Director Kerkorian. I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies here in Washington. He was with us here in Studio 3A. And here are a few of the stories that NPR News is working on this afternoon. A member of Iraq's governing council died today as the result of a gunshot wound she sustained 5 days ago. Akila al-Hashemi had been expected to be appointed as Iraq's ambassador to the United Nations. And the House of Representatives took less than an hour today to approve legislation aimed at ensuring that the national Do Not Call list goes into effect as scheduled next week. Details on those stories coming up later on your NPR News station this afternoon.